member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And good afternoon, Rochester. If you're hopefully staying in, staying warm, and what better time to, you know, just think of your computer questions that maybe have been brewing all week long. You can get them answered right here at Jazz 90.1 Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And we'll be taking for the next 2 hours. Hopefully, Nick is on his way in. He's with the traffic and everything else, a little delayed. But, you know, we're happy here to take your questions, and we'll just pound along without him for the few moments that we can. But did you, by chance,
print? I didn't print it. I'm trying to see if I still have it in my inbox.
Okay, yeah. You know, as always, you know, a lot of great stuff coming up and, you know, stuff constantly popping up. And, you know, the one top story there he had was that one Intel chip flaw. And, of course, you know, that, you know, like anything else, you know, this is one thing we've said for decades, folks, literally two decades. It's just like anything else. They're going to, whether it's an operating system or hardware or anything else, these pirates are always trying to find other ways to get into your system to steal information.
And we've been hearing reports about problems in the Intel management engine for several months now. And now the new hacks are being codenamed Spectre and Meltdown. Which apparently are pretty apt names. So basically, any device that has an Intel chip, which is pretty much all of them,
yeah,
is potentially vulnerable. And at the moment, there is no fix for it. There's an interesting comic in XKCD this week about bots with row hammers. Rowhammer was a previous problem that was found in the memory addressing. If you hammer a row of memory, you can force the bits to change, which means you can get your way into it and make bits do things you want them to.
Yeah, literally pounding and pounding and pounding on it.
Yeah. But, so unless you work for a high-value target, you know, a bank or, you know, large retailer, you are probably not at much risk. But what we're seeing is a lot of hackers are just using random computers as a level of anonymity. Mm-hmm. So any type of exploit they can get into your computer means that there's one more layer between them and the police.
And like we've said right along, you know, and we've been saying this again for decades, is, you know, you have to keep standard running. You know, right now the, you know, virus software. And also anti-spyware, you know, whether it's super anti-spyware or malware bytes, which we recommend. Because here's the thing, not that the viruses aren't out there. I mean, they're less prevalent right now. But just like this exploit of these chips, what they're trying to do is get in there and steal your personal information. Before, when viruses were out, excuse me, and they could, you know, hack it in there and take a couple thousand computers down in there, you know, that was rah, 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 but they didn't derive anything from it. But by doing and exploiting these chips and getting into your system and stealing email address, other personal information, they've got you.
And these exploits are at the chip level, so it's not even an OS problem. And so the worry is that the OS won't be able to patch for a chip problem. And if we're lucky, there'll be a firmware update for the processor. But what is more likely to happen is it won't be fixed, and you'll have to get a new processor.
Yeah, and I like you were saying, though, you know, I wouldn't go quickly like Chicken Little. You know, the sky's falling, and you know, I'm doomed on my computer, because unless you're high profile, you know, you're worth billions and everything else. They're not going to take the time to try to you know, exploit and get into your machine. It's just not their worth their time and effort to do such a task.
But that's where the botnets we've been encountering that come from malicious email that you click on, or a malicious ad that you click on a website. Your device becomes a zombie or a bot on this network, and then they can use you to attack other people. The Mirai botnet, they just unsealed the indictments and made them public. About 600,000 devices, mostly DVRs and type devices, were used in the Mirai botnet to bring down the Dyn DNS service, which took Amazon and Walmart and a bunch of companies off the internet. That turned out to be a couple of guys who were basically they were playing a game where if they could knock someone off the internet, one of their friends, if they could knock one of their friends off the internet, it would they'd win. So they wrote this program to do that, and then started selling it to other people to do denial of service attacks and knock people off the internet, and they never expected it to grow as big as it did, you know, 600,000 machines later that probably still haven't been patched yet. It's an interesting example of what can go wrong, you know, with even without malicious intentions.
Yeah, it's they'll get something out there, you know. They're not just gonna we'll ignore this one. No, it's too big of an issue. It's, you know, like the elephant in the room. They're going to have to address this and find whether it's, like you say, some type of workaround or whatever. But definitely isn't going to need to be addressed, because otherwise your personal information and all that could be hacked. Although, you know, I don't know as if the Chromebooks would be affected.
They may not be, because they're probably not using an Intel chip. They're probably more using an ARM chip.
Yeah.
But it's you never know. There might be something in there. Or now that the Intel hacks are known, people will start attacking some of the other chips. Most cell phones run on ARM chips, so they may not be vulnerable to this specific attack.
Mm-hmm.
But it does mean that it could weaken those chips, as now this attack is known, the people will start looking at other chips and other ways to try to hack into it.
Yeah. It's going to be very interesting, you know, to see how this turns. Well, tell you what, let's go to the phones. We got Carl from Pottstown, PA. How are you guys surviving down there, Carl?
Trying to keep warm.
Now, are you guys getting hit by the cold as bad as we are? Or?
I don't know. I don't know if there's a comparison. I'm in Pottstown. You're in New York, of course.
Yeah.
And I would imagine it would be similar.
Okay. All right, just curious. Yeah, because we've been dealing with low temperatures, and then once you throw in the good old wind and wind chill, it's been pretty dangerous for folks.
Yeah.
Yep. So how can we help you today, sir? What do you have to the show?
I have a question just out of curiosity. When I go to a website, and let's say I like the website, and I want to put an icon on my desktop so that I could just click on that icon that'll take me directly to the website. I know how to do that in Google Chrome, but if I wanted to do that in Internet Explorer, the same method doesn't seem to work. So my question is, in Internet Explorer, if I go to a website that I like, how would I put an icon on my desktop that'll take me directly to that website?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think you just drag the URL to the desktop and it makes an icon.
I would think.
Yeah, I just tried that, and it didn't quite work. But first I highlighted the URL. I could try not highlighting.
Yeah, don't highlight it. Just, you know.
Well, try the to the left of the URL is usually like the little icon for that website.
Yep.
That may do it.
Yes, I know, and that's exactly what works with Chrome. There's a little icon to the left of the URL, but when I go to the same website on Internet Explorer, there is no icon to the left of the URL. It's just blank to the left of the HTTP. There's nothing there except the blank box, a little bit of it. And that got me wondering, well, if I wanted to do this, how would I do it? Well, the way I would do it, I would just do it through Chrome, where the little icon to the left of HTTP does appear.
Yeah.
But it just got me curious, how would I do it from Internet Explorer if there's no little icon there?
Well, there's a long way around. If you select and copy the link from the web browser, and then you go to the desktop and right-click on the desktop and choose Create Shortcut, you can then add that link to the shortcut.
Oh, okay. I didn't think of that.
You may be able to right-click right on the page in IE as well and have a Create Shortcut icon.
Mm-hmm.
This website is not telling me what version of Windows and what version of IE this works on, but might be similar. IE 11 and Windows 10, at least. So right-click on a website. Make sure you're not on a link to another website,
yeah,
so you get the website you really want. And then there should be a Create Shortcut command.
Okay, I'll give that a try. And that answers my question. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. Have a good one.
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, a lot of times you can just use the history to go back to places you've been to recently.
Yeah.
And most of the browsers now have an automatic top sites feature where it remembers
can,
the sites you've been
you
to
can
enough.
Or you can drag it down. Well, Internet Explorer puts that in there anyways. You know, within the box, they have like those little window pane boxes that, you know, your last visited sites.
Yeah.
Like you said.
Yeah, I remember in the early days where you'd save so many bookmarks, you couldn't find the one you wanted. So
yeah,
now we needed bookmark managers to help you manage your bookmarks.
Yeah, folders within folders.
Yeah. What I get mad about is when you add a new bookmark, it puts it at the bottom of the list. So then you have to scroll forever to get to it. Why can't it put it at the top of the list?
Yeah, and then move it down to wherever you want it to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get that.
The last one I bookmark is probably the one I want to get to more often. But, yeah, so then, you have to organize your bookmarks in your bookmark manager.
I wonder if you put a period before it. You know,
yeah, probably you could force
the name.
And then it puts the bottom of the list of periods. So then you get too many of them, yeah. You can sometimes put a space in front of the name to force things at the top of a list.
Yeah, no, they just don't make it very easy. But, you know... But going back to the other issue, though, as far as the chips, one thing, you know, folks, we can't stress enough is, you know, with all these issues and that and getting into the machines and that, passwords. I know you hear us say it constantly, you know, you got to make your password strong. So if you password protect, say, certain folders, which you can do, you know, make it unique. You can even have a program that'll sit there and create passwords for you that are strong. So if they're going to try to get in there and steal some of that information, you can at least put it somewhere where it's going to be a lot harder for them to get. And the passwords have to be unique. You know, like we've said, you know, not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, boom.
9, you know,
yeah. Or 1, 2, 3, 4, and ... You know, I mean, or a bunch of Z's or anything else. Those are very easy, and they can usually crack those, I'd say, probably within the first 10, 15 minutes. If they're common ones that you're just using off the keyboard and not unique. But it's not hard.
And the top passwords for 2017 came out. The top password, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Number two is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. it's not that you need unique passwords on every site. It's the other end is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, companies get hacked, their passwords get lost, and so your password is lost at company X. The bad guys will try banks and shopping sites with that same password.
Well, look at
so it's not your fault.
Equifax.
Yeah.
And how many millions of passwords got stolen there or personal information?
Yep.
I mean, hello, that's a major credit company. And I love that they're still offering a deep scan. You can go to them to get a deep scan.
We'll see if your information is on the dark web. Well, you lost it. You put it there.
Yeah. And if it is, I believe we were talking about that before. And if you go ahead and agree to let them do the deep scan, you're more or less backing out any chances of you suing them if your personal information down the road all of a sudden starts popping up on the dark web. Because, you know, of all the millions and millions of records that they stole, you know, they're not going to get to them all right away. And especially if they know they've been, you know, breached, you know, they're going to lay low for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they're not dumb. I mean, they were smart enough to break in and get it. You know, duh. So that's why, again, a lot of your information, you should go and change the password.
Well, the very beginnings of the Equifax breach were caused by a website plugin that had the default password on it.
Yep.
And so this big company who theoretically hires, you know, good developers, they left the default password on one of their website tools, and the bad guys got in that way.
Yep. Well, I'll tell you what, we got to take a short break, but we want to remind you, you can give us a call. We're here, 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415, and we'll be back with more of your questions right here at member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And we're here to take your questions. Don't forget, the number is 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And who did I say we had on the line?
Well, before we get to Walter, give us a second. Before we get back to that, let's go back to our chip discussion.
Yeah.
So the way this exploit, it's not quite an exploit yet, it's a weakness that could be exploited. The way it works is that modern processors do something called speculative execution. So when it comes to a branch where there's a yes or no decision, it starts executing both directions, yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
To give it a leg up on when the actual decision is made, it can have that branch.
Be ready to go up in that direction.
Right, so it makes the processor run faster. So the other direction, some of those steps may be left in the cache. And so it's possible for a specially crafted program to read that cache of that speculation. And so this is the meltdown flaw because it can delete that. It generally deletes the processes that it didn't use, but there's a delay between when it decides it doesn't use them and when they get deleted. Yeah. And when your chips are working in nanoseconds, milliseconds is a long time.
Yeah.
And so that's the meltdown flaw that exists in the Intel chips. There's a different, more general flaw called Spectre, and that also exists in ARM and AMD chips, including Intel chips. And that can attack smartphones as well and tablets and devices because those are all ARM and AMD based. So eventually we should start seeing patches for the meltdown chip. One of the things that may end up happening is the patch will slow the system down so that the caches can get deleted before they can be executed. So it'll say delete and then wait a cycle to make sure it's deleted.
Mm-hmm.
So that may slow you down a little bit. But it will fix this this exploit.
Issue.
And so we're not sure about the Spectre patch, when that's going to come out. But keep an eye on your patches, and that's why we say always make sure you're running the latest patches. So that does lead us into our poll of the week, that the meltdown and Spectre patches will slow your system down, and our choices are great. My system's too fast anyway. Second, it's always something, or of course it will, or six, I'm buying a Chromebook. That Chromebook may still have the problem, though.
Yeah, we're not sure on that one.
Because it's based on the same types of chips. And so right now we have 28 votes, and leading the voting is it's always something, with 46%. 25% say, of course it will. 14% say, great, my system's running too fast. 14% are also say, I'm buying a Chromebook. So tell us what you think. You can go to our poll discussions on the forum. Down, you may have to scroll down on the right-hand side of our website to get to the forums. And the first forum is the show discussion. Nick doesn't have that one up yet. Net neutrality from last week is still up yet. I'm sure Nick will start posting a discussion for Meltdown Inspector Bugs, and we'll hear what you think. And if you run into problems with your systems, you can post there as well.
Yep. All right, let's go back to the phone. Who did I say I hit?
Walter from Greece.
Go ahead, Walter.
Hello there, gentlemen. I'd like to ask you a question regarding the chip defect.
Yeah.
Okay, I had read in a newspaper that this is going to be a major problem for cloud storage and cloud computing, because your data, from what they were describing, is your data is all interconnected with everybody else, and therefore the only way that they can see to safeguard it is that everybody gets their own little storage hard drive or something, that they're going to have to try to segregate you from a corporation or you from Debbie Klein or from somebody else so that they can't access that. Have you heard such a thing? Can you explain it further?
Well, these problems don't affect hard drive storage. They
right.
they only affect CPUs, processors.
Right.
The cloud is basically a euphemism for somebody else's computer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so while your data is being read, that data is read off the hard drive and into memory. There's a chance that it could go through the processor cache and potentially be vulnerable. So it doesn't matter that your data is shared next to somebody else's data stored on the same hard drive, because it goes through the same computer.
Yeah.
Everybody would have to have their own computer.
Right.
To be segregated. We already do that with your own computer at home. So that's likely not gonna happen and not be a big issue in the cloud computing arena, mostly because the data passes so fast that these exploits that are all timing based and rely on the nanoseconds between cycles, the next batch of data has already being processed, and it's probably unrelated to the last batch of data, so it may not be as big an issue technologically. What we're seeing in the headlines, and I posted a BBC article a little bit ago, what we're seeing in the headlines is a lot of the scaremongering, fear,
yeah,
uncertainty,
which
doubt,
they will, yeah,
because that gives you to makes you click on the link. But it's so Google researchers, that was Google that found these, found a Spectre in the Intel chips. The big companies will most likely be the first ones to get the patches loaded. And so, as typical with any patch that comes out, it's the trickle down that the big companies throw it in, and it's the average home users that don't do their patches as fast as they should that will end up being more vulnerable in the end. But I haven't read that specific story about cloud computing, but I wouldn't see it. It would be any different than single computers are now.
Okay. What I've read in the paper is that the issue is it just slipped my mind. But anyways, the issue was that I'm sorry, I just lost trying to listen to you and coming up trying to develop the next question. So maybe I'll call back if I have the next part of my question. Because there was something that they said that it's okay, and I remember it's a built-in defect in the architecture, and therefore they have to wait until the next generation of chips come out to correct this architecture that allows this exploit.
Right. Right. So what the patches we're likely going to see are operating system level patches that fix the problems in the chip, which is why there's the potential to slow down your computer, because now it has to run this patch through the cache instead of letting the cache run as fast as it can. So the next generation of chips will likely have an architectural change to stop this type of problem from happening.
But that, again, doesn't mean that they can't turn around and put some other type of flash that you could do to the BIOS that might patch it.
Well, see, that's the BIOS. That's not the CPU.
Right.
Usually you can't change the CPU in software. You have to physically replace it.
Right. But, I mean, again, if there's...
Yeah, so maybe in the BIOS or maybe in the OS they'll be able to put in not necessarily a patch but a workaround so that it will prevent the flaw from happening.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. Well, thank you for all your thoughts and information. Appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yep. Yeah, so it's not exactly your cloud storage itself that's vulnerable. It's the computers that's running your cloud storage. And one of the reasons cloud storage has gotten so cheap is that because hard drives are so cheap, you can run hundreds of customers on a single hard drive, and you can have thousands of hard drives on a single RAID system set up and managed by a single computer. So it's kind of nice being able to have that kind of space.
All right, tell you what, let's go back to the phones. We got Zach from Brighton. Go ahead, Zach.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Yourself?
Fine. So my daughter calls me because this morning she gets an unsolicited call from someone claiming to be from Dell. And they seem to know that she has an Alienware laptop and that her Microsoft Office subscription has expired. And they say it's related to some kind of vague virus that they want to fix for her. So naturally she hangs up on them, which and then
smart
she contacted
girl.
Me, which I told them was the right thing, absolutely right thing to do. But the only thing that she was worried about is how would they have known what type of laptop she had and that her Microsoft Office was expired? Would there have been some kind of leak of her information somewhere that would have allowed the scammers to know that?
How long has she had the system?
She's had the computer about a year and a half.
All right. Here's the thing. You know, there's, you know, history out there, and they might have stolen, you know, gotten into her system and, you know, found that she was doing some maybe research and trying to find a new computer.
Uh-huh. And it may not be her direct computer.
Right.
I can see it just being a guess, and you're right. You know, your Office subscription is wearing out, running out.
Yeah.
Even if you don't have one, you might not realize that. Okay. Or she went to a website that was infected. And one of the things websites will ask is what kind of computer are you on and what a browser are you running?
Yep.
So it may not have been something directly in her computer.
Very innocent questions without, you know, getting into her personal questions to raise an eyebrow.
So she probably doesn't need to call Dell and tell them they've got some kind of leak. That's probably just a waste of time.
Not unless you call them. Is the service person going to call you back?
No, right. Dell probably has an email address. It's usually abuse@whatevercompany.com. That it wouldn't hurt to email them, but even if she knows the phone number they called from, that probably doesn't matter because those are easy enough to spoof. Very hard to.
It was an 877 prefix, but I told her that it probably is going to be no one's going to pick up, or it's going to be redirected or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Those
okay,
calls.
So she doesn't have to get too freaked out, but if she sends an email to Dell, that would be a reasonable thing to do to let them know.
Sure.
Yeah, just
and
give them a heads up.
She may want to run the Security Tango and scan her machine for malware just in case something did get in. But it was more likely just a random cold call.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting more and more common these days, and we're also seeing website ads on websites popping up saying there's a problem on your computer. You know, we're Microsoft support. Give us a call.
Yeah, they're playing the odds because they know the odds are so much in their favor. What's the biggest word processor that most folks use? Word. What's the most popular spreadsheet? Excel. So, you know, I mean, they can sit there and guess that kind of stuff and, you know, until they, you know, and try to spoof somebody. That's what they're trying to do, intimidate.
Okay, but I'm glad she knew to do the right thing, which was just to hang up on them.
Yeah, generally just hang up. They're probably fake. And even if they were real, there's no way to prove they were real.
Yeah, no.
And generally speaking, companies aren't going to call you when there's a problem.
Hello. No way.
Yep.
Right. They often won't call you even.
They won't call you if there is a problem.
So
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for your time. I'll call her back and reassure her.
Okay.
Sure. Yep.
Thank you.
No problem. Yeah, that's we're seeing more and more people getting tricked by these fake tech support calls and fake messages that come in as ads on websites. So a lot of people are tempted to run an ad blocker, but then the problem there is a lot of websites don't work if you block the ads, which I can understand. That's how you get to read websites for free, is they put ads on them to generate revenue. Otherwise, you're going to have to pay for every website you go to now.
So, yeah, there you go.
It's about that.
Like we've said before, folks, you know, this is one vicious cycle, and it just keeps going around and around. They just try to get more and more creative in the way they do things. But tell you what, we're coming back to finish up this hour in just a few moments. But hey, pick up the phones. Give us a call, 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. At member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Well, welcome back, everybody. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And we are here taking your questions for the next hour and 15 minutes. Pick up the phones. Give us a call, 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And one thing we should say, since this is the first official show of 2018, yep. I hope everybody had definitely a happy new year. And hopefully this year is going to be a new and an exciting one, hopefully.
Yep. But we're still trying to catch through some of the old and boring things from last year.
we are. Yeah, it's just the way it is. But all things, just because of the new year, the other stuff still is there. But
In fact, that segues into our next news story. Apple is having a $29 battery replacement program for iPhone 6 and later, and estimates are that could lead to 16 million fewer iPhones sold in 2018. Customers are opting opt for a battery replacement instead of upgrading their iPhone. Could be a mild headwind for unit sales, resulting in millions of fewer sales in this upcoming year. Up to 77% of iPhone users are eligible to upgrade their batteries at a discounted price. In the best case scenario, if only 10% of those upgrade their phone or take advantage of the $29 battery replacement, and around 30% of them decide not to buy a new phone this year, that could be 16 million phones not sold. Remains to be seen, even if how the battery replacement program will affect sales, despite the analyst predictions, as there are other considerations that drive upgrades. So Apple began offering a reduced-cost battery replacement following a backlash from an admission that it slows down some of the older iPhones with degraded batteries to prevent them from shutting down. So your choice was to have your phone shut off because the power's too low, or to slow down the processor and keep the phone running.
So
either way they picked, they'd be in trouble.
I've sort of been out of the loop for the past week or so. What is it, swelling, or it's just not holding the charge?
It's just
what?
Getting old. So as the chemistry in the battery wears out, the battery gets old.
It's worth only so many charges.
Yeah, it's only so many charges. It only holds so much capacity.
Yeah.
Part of the problem is that the battery indicator on the phone currently only shows you the charge percentage. So when you buy a phone, 100% is, say, 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 or 4 years later, 100% could be 10 minutes. Because it's percent of charge, it's not life. So what Apple was doing is they were slowing down the processor on phones whose batteries have degraded, so they didn't shut down. So say you start up a game and there's a peak power draw, your battery, your phone would shut off because there's not enough power for that game. For that peak. And so what Apple did, starting in System 10.2 last year, so it was a year ago this actually happened, they slowed the clock speed down on the phone so that the battery demands aren't so heavy, so your phone doesn't shut off.
Oh, okay.
Researchers were finally able to show that actually the clock speed is being dropped. And so that was the choice that Apple made, is drop the clock speed or let the phone shut off. And as I mentioned, either way they picked would have been wrong.
Yeah, and you're going to tick somebody off.
Right. So now what Apple is doing is they lowered the price of battery replacements to $29. I've done a dozen of them this week, literally a dozen.
Oh, really?
Batteries. Yeah. And what the concern is, and there's already several people trying to institute class action lawsuits, the concern is that someone who had an old phone that kept shutting off or felt slow would buy a new phone for, you know, many hundreds of dollars instead of replacing the battery. And so that's what the class action lawsuits that are trying to imply, that Apple was forcing people to buy a new phone by intentionally slowing down their old one.
No, they could go just buy it. They don't even have to buy an Apple phone. They can go buy an Android phone or anything else.
Or if they'd have taken their phone in for service, the test would have shown the battery's weak, and it's $100. It used to be $100 for a new battery.
Mm-hmm.
So $100 for a new battery versus, you know,
They're offering a solution.
Yeah.
You might not like it, but you know what? The phone isn't new. It's just like when we tell folks, you know, they sit there and say, well, how old's your laptop? 7 years old.
Yeah.
And they're running Windows XP or Windows 7.
I just got my laptop 5 years ago, years ago.
That's exactly. Not, yeah. You know, hello, technology is moving on. Just because, you know, you want to still stay back in the, you know, Stone Age, you know, they can't help that. They can't keep backdating and, you know, keeping other things current because the technology is moving forward. Yep. Just because you're not keeping up with it as fast, they can't help that.
So if you have an iPhone 6 or 6 Plus or 6S or 6S Plus or SE, the battery replacement has dropped to $29.
And that's fair.
Which is pretty good. It's still not user replaceable, and it's a pain to take the things apart.
Uh-huh.
And basically, that's all the phones that can run the current iOS 11. The iPhone 5S's are not included in this in the battery price drop, even though they do run iOS 11. So as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, a friend of the show, Dennis, had posted that he thinks they should cover the 5s also.
He must have a 5.
He may have a 5. But the 6S...
Or one of his kids do.
Yeah, the 6S is still currently being sold as one of the cheaper models. So that's the other crazy thing, is Apple is keeping the older models behind to be cheaper. So the SE, the 6S, the 6S Plus, the 7, the 7S, the 8, the 8 Plus, and the 10. So Apple has like 6 phones in its current lineup. So they have phones starting at $329 unlocked. So if you want the SE, so if you have one of the older phones and your battery life isn't lasting as long as it used to, or the phone feels slower than it used to, bring it into either the Apple Store or our shop. We can run a battery test on it and see if it's qualifies for a inexpensive battery replacement.
You know what I find interesting here? Kind of ironic. Is here you're sitting there saying how they have, what, 6 different types of phones?
Yeah.
Now, if we had gone back, say, 15 years ago, that would have been 6 or 7 different desktop computers.
Yep.
And laptops.
Apple has cut down quite a bit on the number of SKUs they sell, but it's slowly creeping back up again when you add capacities and colors. There's like 40 different phones and 40 different iPads.
Now, what about their direction as far as, say, laptops and desktops? Because, like I say, you can go into this. I noticed going into some of the different retail stores, just on the PC side, desktop units are far and few.
Yeah.
It's all the tablets and the laptops.
Yeah, the industry in general is seeing about 75-25% laptops over desktops. People like the portability of a laptop. Laptops are powerful enough these days. Used to be we would sell a desktop and a laptop to every customer because they wanted something big and powerful and they wanted something light and easy to carry.
Yeah.
So now the laptops are powerful and easy to carry.
Well,
And then the tab. So now we're seeing an interesting trend. A lot of people are buying a desktop and a tablet.
Yeah.
So you have the big screen a desktop computer. So typically, you'll pay the same for a desktop or a laptop, but you'll get a much bigger screen with the desktop. and you get a battery with a laptop.
Yeah.
So your choice. And then a tablet can be your second computer, or even we're seeing now, you know, third computer, that can do almost everything you would do on a laptop. And it's even smaller, even lighter, and even cheaper than a laptop.
Yeah. Because, like, my wife, she has a laptop. She loves her little laptop that I fixed up for her and that. And like I say, we even brought it here today because she's been here with me since, we've been here since around 9:30 when we covered for the Polka Show. And, you know, that way it gives her the portability that she can still do the stuff that she wants. But where, for me, at home, I still like my desktop because I have the big screens and that, and I, you know, constantly doing a few things at once. But yet, I got to admit, I still love my Chromebook because, say we want to watch some other type of movie and that type of thing, I can take the Chromebook into the living room, hook it up to the big screen TV, run it off of that, and boom. You know, we're watching it on the big screen instead of some little thing.
Yeah. And I'm pretty much the same way. I've got the desktop machine. I hardly ever use it because I don't do anything that big. And I've got the laptop I run the show here with because I'm doing the video editing and the multi-camera shoot and all that stuff. But almost all the time, I'm just using the iPad because that does pretty much everything I need it to do.
Hmm.
It's kind of a leftover in the old way of thinking that you need the big desktop and the big laptop.
Yeah, because, well, like I say, my wife, she uses a laptop, and then upstairs, she likes using the little tablet.
Yep.
I have a little tablet from Verizon that she can sit there and work up there. And
we sometimes call that the living room computer, the bedroom computer.
Yeah, yeah, and she can just sit there and search stuff and that, and she likes doing that stuff. She's into Find a Grave and that.
Yep.
You know, keeps up with that type of stuff. So
I read news stories and books on my tablet, and so I don't need a physical keyboard that often with it. So it's even, that makes it even lighter than a laptop or a Chromebook.
Yeah. So yeah, a lot of different solutions out there compared to years back.
Yep.
You know, we've just gone. It's like into a whole new direction, which I find very interesting. You know, I mean, excuse me. Bronchitis, still getting over that. But, you know, it's amazing, and you start to think about, you know, how folks were so tied to so much other stuff. And, you know, no, I got to have this, and I got to have that. And how we've now trended towards more cloud stuff.
Yeah.
Because they see such the advantage of it.
Yep.
You know, I'm backing up stuff up to the cloud, and it's, oh, I don't have, like me, if I have my big box computer and I go out west and I just take my laptop or, like I say, a tablet, I can sit there, log into my Google account, and everything's there.
Yep. That kind of harkens back to what the earlier caller said about the fake tech support, just assuming you have Microsoft Office. A lot of people are perfectly fine with Google Docs.
Yeah.
Or one of the other cloud-based services, because everything you type is in the cloud. It's on your tablet. It's on your laptop. It's on your desktop.
Yeah, no matter where I go. Like all the thousands of photos that I have up there in the cloud, I could be out west and all of a sudden, you know, pull up my tablet and say, oh, here, I can show you these photos, and boom, log into my account, and there it is.
Yep.
And every one of them, you know, and it doesn't matter where I am. The one thing I did like, though, recently, I just upgraded my desktop computer because my other one was dying. That thing had been with me for quite a few years and served me very well. But once I got to Windows 10 and then it was putting a little strain on it, and it was starting to show its age. So what was nice, though, but by that point, like, I used Google, you know, Gmail and everything else, and even Chrome. So all my bookmarks and everything else, back in the old day, we would have been telling folks,
it was a pain if you wanted to upgrade and
make
keep
sure
all your
you
bookmarks.
Want to back up your bookmarks. Oh, emails. Yeah, you got to go to the folder here and work your way down and save that, and then you can export them and restore them. Well, with Google Chrome, or just Google, you don't have to worry about that. You know, I just, boom. Hooked up the new computer, moved what files and that I had to do, and install whatever programs I had to. But as far as all my bookmarks, passwords, and everything else, boom, they were up there. They're saved, and I don't have to worry about it. The emails and that, no problem. Even the old ones that I saved for this or that, they're automatically there. I didn't have to give it a second thought. It was so convenient.
Ran into someone the other day that had 100,000 messages in their inbox because they just never weed through them.
Seriously?
Yeah. Never. So you got to go through and delete the junk. I never bother.
Well, I had one client that I just, a laptop I just cleaned off a couple weeks ago, came in. And, of course, it's an older machine, and it was quite full. He goes, I don't know what's taking up all the space. And I want to say maybe it was like a 200-gig hard drive.
And yeah.
It was so full. If he opened up something and tried to resave it, it would crash it.
Yep.
So I went into, you know, started looking around. Of course, I ran Super Anti-Spyware and Malware Bytes. Super Anti-Spyware alone found over, I think it was 8,000 items. And Malware Bytes found 1,000, you know, a bunch of items. And so, you know, and cleaned it up. Then I began, because he's still running Windows 7, I went into the temp directory.
Yep.
He had over 100, and I think it was like 112 gig of junk sitting in there.
Half the storage used up by temp files.
And I just cleaned it out, and all of a sudden you saw from going to no space to whoop, I got over half of the drive left.
Yep.
So, you know, I was able to clean a lot of that stuff out for him so he could keep using it. Because
just in case you want to roll back any of those 100 updates you've put in over the last 10 years.
Yeah. With Windows 7, yeah, no. And like I say, it was an old machine. It was showing its age and that. But you know what? Eh, that's the way it is. Hold on a minute here.
Was it approaching the top of the hour here?
Yeah.
Got to find the right button to push.
There it is.
Yeah. Been away for a few weeks and I lose it. Well, tell you what, folks. Yeah, that music tells us that we got to take a short break, but we're not done yet. We'll be back with another hour of sound bites right here at Member Supported Jazz 90.1. And again, don't go anywhere. Pick up the phones. Give us a call, 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0015 with your questions. And we'll be back with more on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And we are here taking your questions. Don't be shy. Pick up the phones. I doubt if you're outside doing any gardening work or anything else out there.
Shoveling, maybe.
Yeah. But even that, you might want to use some extreme caution because it is still very nasty. That stuff, you know, can't tell folks enough. You know, definitely make sure you cover up because it doesn't take very long to... you know, feel the cold. So, you know, like I say, pick up the phones, give us a call, 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415, and we'll see what we can do about getting them answered. And as I've always said for decades, there's no dumb question. The only dumb question is the one that you don't ask.
Although there are some dumb answers now.
Yeah, we've had that happen too.
Yeah. All right, so speaking of batteries, HP has recalled 50,000 batteries from consumer notebooks after some meltdowns are reported. So HP said this week it's recalling about 50,000 batteries for free, which were originally sold as part of the HP notebook itself or as a standalone accessory for the notebook. The company has said it's received 8 reports of those batteries overheating, melting, or charring, and the reports include property damage and burns. HP said the laptops and batteries had been sold through the popular retail outlets, including Amazon, Best Buy, and HP.com. From December 2015 through December 2017, about 50,000 of the affected batteries were sold within the U.S., and an additional 2,600 sold in Canada. Among the incident reports were three reports of property damage, including $4,500, as well as one case where a customer suffered first-degree burns to their hand.
Wow.
Fortunately, there's an easy way to tell if you've been affected before it overheats and charges. HP has set up a website, www.hp.com/go/battery-program-2018, and I'll have that link posted in a moment. Where customers can check to see if their battery is included in the recall. When you're there, you'll find an HP battery validation utility to download. It will test your battery. HP will replace the batteries at no cost. If you own five or more of the affected notebooks, there will be an additional processing fee. Do them five at a time instead of more at a time. If you do have an affected battery, don't remove it yourself, HP warned. Instead, HP has developed a BIOS update program that will put the battery into safety mode, which will discharge the battery and prevent it from being recharged until it can be replaced. So HP's way of dealing with old and bad batteries is to drain them completely
and shut them down.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
So your notebook will refuse to operate without the charger attached, and you'll need to plug it in to keep using it. For additional questions, HP has set up an FAQ on the battery recall. We do see battery recalls happening every so often due to manufacturing issues. The most important thing you can do is check to make sure your notebook battery is affected. No one wants to repeat of the Galaxy Note 7 debacle, where how many millions of those were recalled, and there were several very dangerous fires caused by them.
Actually, only one. The one on the airplane.
One on the airplane, which was probably the worst place it could happen.
Yeah, the one and only. I mean, the others, there were reports of things heating up, but the only actual fire one was the one on the airplane.
So it's a lot of people then started demonstrating problems with batteries by punching holes in them and pounding nails.
Hello.
Yes, that will make it explode.
Duh.
But, the amount of power that we're cramming into batteries these days is getting higher and higher.
Because we want to do more and more and more and don't have the time to recharge your systems. So
you don't want to wait long enough.
Yeah. Well, tell you what, let's go back to the phones. We got Tim from Greece. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, how you doing, guys?
Great. Yourself?
Good, fine. I got all these updates with Firefox, and I have a Mac Mini that's about 4 years old, and the Apple upgrades. And I have Norton Security, and I also just loaded down your malware bytes one. And now when I seem like I open consecutive tabs on the new Firefox, Norton keeps popping up. I need to reset it or something, and then it wants to take over and default everything to Norton search engines and everything.
Yes, that's one of Norton's features, in air quotes there. So one of the ways that Norton Security tries to make your internet secure is by pushing all searches through them so that they can scan your search for malicious websites before you even go there in the first place. Unfortunately, that slows everything down because it has to go through Norton first.
I mean, unfortunately, it got automatically renewed before I wanted to stop it for the year and then switch either to one of your pays or just go with this malware bytes. Would that be a better way to go?
It's not a bad idea to run an antivirus just to be safe.
Yeah, but there's the freebies.
But the freebies are often better and less taxing on the system. Mm-hmm. And malware is
a more
common
you could use
assurance. Yeah.
For
you may be able to turn off the Norton internet search feature.
Uninstall that part.
You could uninstall it and try to get your renewal subscription back.
Okay, that's what I was thinking, but I just wanted to double check because of the trends. I'm a little worried and concerned about the transition period if I do that, but if I already have the other one of the free services you recommend.
But here's one thing, though, Tim. Just don't use Malwarebytes. We recommend two, Malwarebytes and Super Anti-Spyware.
Okay.
You got to run both.
Okay.
Because they both do something different. No one program can get all the different spyware and malware out there. They can't do it efficiently.
That's what I read from the article in the paper and been listening to you guys, so I was trying to get this sorted out.
Yeah. Now, if you get those...
Norton renewed in January, but it renewed in December instead. And that's what I wanted to make sure before I did any transitioning that I got it right.
Yeah. Yep. Go ahead and get those two on there. Get them installed. Get them running. And then through the Norton, usually, you know, because it's a package deal, there's different sections, and you can control it. And you could turn off the sections that you don't want. You can keep the virus detection going, but turn off the other stuff that wants to take over more control of your web browsing and everything else.
Okay, I'll have to fish around it and see how to do that. Okay, thanks, guys.
Mm-hmm. Yep, you're welcome.
Yeah, so he's doing a smart thing. You know, it's never a bad idea. Well, it can be.
Yeah.
I guess you should be running some sort of an antivirus because there are still old viruses still scanning around.
Well, that's the other thing, too. You know, we hear folks, well, I'm running antivirus. Yeah, that's good. What else are you running? What else do I need? Seriously?
And is your antivirus up to date, or did the 60-day trial run out when you bought your computer 5 years ago?
Yeah. Oh, that's another good one. Yep. They'll say, well, when I first got the computer, I signed up for it, and I don't worry about it.
Yep.
And they ignored the, like you say, the notice that, it's only a 90-day trial
pop-ups.
Period. Yeah. Yeah.
We're so used to ignoring pop-up ads that even when they're important, you ignore them.
Yeah, and that they were supposed to, do the update and renew. And they choose not now, and boom.
Remind me later.
Yeah, and then it got canceled.
So we're still seeing what's being dubbed the internet background radiation. Old viruses, the Code Red and the Nimba, and all these old viruses that are still scattering around the internet, usually because there's some old, computer running in a closet somewhere that hasn't been touched in a decade.
Yeah, no, it just sits there because it's doing very mundane stuff.
The guy that wrote that program for that company left 10 years ago, and the computer's just sitting there running ever since.
Mm-hmm. And they haven't had to worry about it or even think about it.
Yep.
Probably even forgot that it's
probably
in there. Oh, where is that? Yeah, he worked with us a long time ago. Oh, well.
We have a company that has a custom database that was written something like 20 years ago in XS 2000. And we're trying to export the data to get it to run on a modern database program so it will run on a Windows 10 machine.
What is it, like a little DBase?
No, it was Microsoft Access.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And they don't want to pay the Access fees again. Because Access is one of those pay programs, so it's it can be frustrating because there's no export command. So we're trying to find a way that can read the data, and the guy that wrote it is long gone.
Ouch!
And every new OS that comes out, it gets a little more brittle.
Mm-hmm.
But all their customer records are in it, so it's a CRM, customer record management database. So there are plenty of choices to choose from now. The big problem is getting the data out of the old one.
Hmm.
We're even suggesting you get a couple of interns from the local colleges to just retype everything.
Yeah, summer, it's a good summer job.
Yep, that's sort of the fail-safe if we can't find a way to export.
Yeah, that would be the best to do it. Have them sitting there and just typing.
Yeah,
type data entry.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, speaking of antivirus, antivirus software could be turned into a tool for spying. So it has been a secret and long known to intelligence agencies, but rarely to consumers, that security software can be a very powerful spying tool. So security software runs closest to the bare metal of the computer, privileged access to nearly every program, application, web browser, file, email. And that's a good reason for this, because the security programs have to look at everything like that to try to evaluate what touches your machine in search of finding malicious things or even things vaguely malicious. These days, the false positive reports are often more of a problem. And by downloading security software, companies could run the risk of an untrustworthy antivirus maker or a hacker or a spy giving a foothold into their system. And this abuse could give them deep access to track customers' every digital movement. So there's a battle against digital malicious code, and antivirus products are a staple in that battle, said Patrick Wardle, chief research officer at Digita Security. Ironically, these products share many characteristics with advanced cyber espionage the implants that espionage people use to get into computers. Mr. Wardle would know. He's a former hacker at the National Security Agency. And he recently succeeded in subverting antivirus software sold by Kaspersky Labs and turning it into a tool for classified documents. So by taking an antivirus program that's designed to look at everything on your computer, he was able to make it look at everything on your computer.
Okay.
So his curiosity was piqued by recent news that Russian spies had used Kaspersky antivirus to siphon off classified documents off the home computer of an NSA developer and may have played a critical role in the broader Russian intelligence gathering, which is an accusation that Kaspersky himself has denied. For years, intelligence agencies suspected Kaspersky's security products provided a backdoor for the Russian intelligence, which I always found odd because foreign governments could claim that Symantecs has a backdoor by the U.S. government, or McAfee has a backdoor by the U.S. government. Any of them could be.
Yeah, the potential is very good there.
Yeah, a draft of a top-secret report leaked by Edward Snowden, a former NSA contractor. The NSA seems to be a common theme here. they can't even keep their own secrets. So a draft of a top-secret letter said in 2008 that Kaspersky software could be used to collect sensitive information from customer machines, and the same can be said of Symantec and McAfee and everybody else. The documents in the Snowden leak showed that Kaspersky was not the NSA's only target. Other targets included more than two dozen antivirus makers, including Checkpoint in Israel and Avast in the Czech Republic. Last September, the Department of Homeland Security ordered all federal agencies to cease using Kaspersky because they believed the threat of their Kaspersky's products. About a month later, the New York Times reported that Homeland Security Directive was based in large part on intelligence shared by Israeli intelligence officers, who, in the last paragraph, were also a target of the NSA. The Israeli intelligence officers who were able to hack into Kaspersky in 2014. So don't use Kaspersky because our allies have hacked them. they looked in on the company for months while it was being hacked. So do you still use Kaspersky? Mr. Kaspersky himself has denied that he is in cooperating with the government, but it's very easy for hackers these days to break into places. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 585-9-5922. Ignore what I just said.
I think what he's trying to say, folks, is give us a call at 966-5299.
That's it.
And toll free 1-800-790-0415. And we got Craig on the phone, and we will get to you, Craig. So just sit tight. We got to take a short break, but more to come right here at Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on Member Supported Jazz 90.1. Computer problems? Get answers from the experts. Sound Bites, noon to two Saturdays, only on Jazz 90.1.
Oh, that's an interesting
that's a new one.
Yeah. Welcome back, folks. You're listening to the Sound Bites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And we have Craig from Brighton on. Go ahead, Craig.
Hey, I'm calling about getting your thoughts on trouble with the Windows 10 fall update. I'm wondering if I'm the only human being who's adding it.
Yes, you are.
It was amazing because last weekend I wasted a whole day of my life trying to figure out why the update wouldn't work on one of my computers. We've got three computers, all on the Windows Home 64. And I got tired of it trying to, you know, download and download and fail and fail. It's been going on for months. So I wound up basically doing a clean install on one computer and eventually went in. And at the end of it, the computer, I didn't see any new features at all. So I guess the question is there any way, are we just kind of stuck with Windows trying to completely try to update machines that don't want to be updated? Or are there some common problems that prevent the update? And finally, I couldn't find a way to tell it to quit trying to install. Maybe you have some secret information that maybe that tells to quit trying to install on the other two computers where it won't.
Well, unfortunately, no. There's no way to make it stop installing, trying to install. What you can do and what you should do first is check with the manufacturer of the computer to see if they have any driver updates for the BIOS.
Did it have Windows 10 on it before?
One of them was it shipped with Windows 10. It actually was a Microsoft Surface.
Okay.
And
that should have updated itself.
Yeah. And then another one was like a 3-year-old Asus. It shipped with 7, and we did the free update. So no, I haven't checked the websites for the other two machines. But
all right, the other one that's got the Windows 7. Mm-hmm. You're definitely going to, if it's, say, an HP or whatever, because what I've run into a number of folks mm-hmm. having issues with is they have, say, an older machine, mm-hmm. and it says, oh, yeah, go ahead and do the update for Windows 10.
Yeah.
It says it should work.
Yeah.
But you got to go to the manufacturer and see what they say, because quite often they will come back and tell you, yeah, you can try to put it on, but we don't recommend it, nor do we support it, because it was not designed to run Windows 10.
And the 10 was running on all the machines fine. It was just the Windows Phone update.
Yeah. So there have been issues getting the update to load. It's usually some weird problem in the registry that stops it from loading. Mm-hmm. One of the fixes that a lot of people have reported is instead of using Microsoft Update to mm-hmm. get it, use the Microsoft Download System Builder Update, which you download a full install instead of mm-hmm. just an update.
Uh-huh.
And then that all often helps a lot of those weird little problems getting the update loaded. Yeah.
Okay.
And I just posted an article on the new features in the Fall Creators Update. Mm-hmm. They've added some 3D features where you can turn graphics into 3D. You can now type emojis from your keyboard. If you hit the mm-hmm. Windows key and a period, you can type your own emojis. You can pin contacts to the taskbar. You can call someone on Skype from the taskbar. So there's really exciting things they've added in the Creator Update.
It depends on how you use the damn computer, but
yeah, exactly.
Dictation they've added built into Windows.
Yeah. All right. So thanks for the.
But yeah, you aren't the only one.
Yeah, you're not the lone goat there by any means. Not even close.
Uh-huh. All righty, thank you, gentlemen.
You're welcome. Yep.
Yeah, they talk of the Fall Creators Update, and I guess if you're doing 3D design work, then yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there you can add. Windows Mixed Reality is what they're calling it, so they've added some more 3D tools for creating 3D objects. Better use for pen and touch. So if you have a graphics tablet or a touch screen,
mm-hmm.
It's easier to use, and you can handwrite on top of things now.
That's weird, though. But I mean, a lot of this stuff, this graphics and, like you say, all this other stuff, it's just to a very small, selective audience.
Yeah. But they have to keep adding new features or they'll get left behind.
And think, oh, you can do this. Yeah, just like Greg was saying that, I probably wouldn't use that. Just like the 3D feature. I probably wouldn't use that either. You know, I mean, like you said, though, they are, enhancements. I'll give them that.
Yep.
But are they enhancements that the majority of users are going to use?
Yep.
I don't think so.
Emoji is the sort of the big thing for the younger audience these days.
Yeah.
And everyone's trying to get their new emoji. You remember the big fuss there was over Google's hamburger emoji a couple months ago?
Oh, yeah.
The cheese was on the bottom. And no one puts their cheese on the bottom.
Yeah. Hey, no. That's unconstitutional.
And it got so bad that one of the Google product managers, Sundar Pichai himself, came out and said, we're going to drop everything and fix the emoji problem on Monday. So in Android 8.1, they've fixed the emoji problem.
Oh.
So the burger
I can sleep so well now.
Better. Yep.
I mean,
cheese is on top. So it goes patty, lettuce, tomato, cheeseburger, patty. Bun.
Okay.
So now the question is, do you put the tomato on top of the lettuce to catch the tomato juice, or do you put the lettuce on top of the tomato? Apparently this matters to people.
I'd say hold the pickle, hold the tomato and lettuce.
Yeah.
I don't need rabbit food.
What's really weird is that every OS handles the emoji icon slightly different.
I guess I'd have an objection. What? I can't order it the way I want?
Nope. Only one type of burger emoji.
At least at Burger King, you can get it your way.
Yeah. Somebody's, HTC, there were only 4 sesame seeds. And Facebook Messenger, there's only 2 sesame seeds on top of the bun. So that seemed a little weak to some people.
Yeah, it got gypped.
Yeah.
Probably with all the handling, the seeds fell off.
Yep. So if you're interested in playing with emoji, there's the Emojipedia is put out by the Emoji Group, which is part of the ANSI standard for in addition to making real characters. In fact, they officially approved a capital Eset in the German language that looks like a B.
Mm-hmm.
It has a double S sound, but it looks like a B because that's German. So there was only a lowercase version of that character. They've now officially adopted an uppercase version. That's the same thing, just looks a little bigger. But the Emojipedia lets you go through and see the different emojis, and you can submit an emoji that you want to appear in the next version, or you can see what emojis are used. The most popular emoji is right now a person shrugging. Eh?
Yeah.
let's see what else. A red heart is next. A face with tears of joy. Are very popular. Face blowing a kiss is very popular. And so now we're moving toward the next emoji list. Different sports, different fruit. A spool of thread was added to the emoji list. Apparently enough people wanted a spool of thread.
Mm.
Enough people still. And the other thing they're adding in the new emojis are being able to alternate directions. So, person running, you can choose whether they're running to the left or running to the right.
Oh, okay.
The last couple of emojis, they added different skin tones to most of the person figures. So there's male, female, androgynous, and with a different range of skin tones.
Did you see that one thing on Facebook? The wife texts the husband that the car wouldn't start. And he goes, well, what's on the screen? And she goes, well, there's this little emoji up in the upper left-hand corner, and it looks like a guy sitting on the toilet. It was a -4.
-4, yep.
If you study it long enough, it looks like somebody's sitting on a toilet.
Yep. You'll all be happy to know that one of the emoji that was not used, so it was denied, is the frowny face poop emoji.
Frowny face poop.
So we have a smiley face poop emoji.
Okay.
The frowny face has been denied, so we're not going to get a frowny face poop.
Okay.
So the Emojipedia is that when you have nothing to do on a cold winter afternoon,
yeah,
you can look through this and see what's weird.
And we still got some time, folks, so if you want to pick up the phones, give us a call at 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. We are here and starting off the new year, trying to get your questions answered. And hopefully some folks got some new toys for Christmas, and they're trying them out and everything else. So, if you got, I know a couple folks were really hoping to get new Chromebooks. And hopefully a number of folks that I talk to, because I get that all the time. Right now, so many folks that are bringing in their old laptops and want to, get something new.
Yep. There used to be seasons for new computers. Just like in the fall. Excuse me. The new cars are coming out, so that you know about a new car, so you can get an old one cheaper. Computers don't really have seasons anymore. It's most of the companies just release them whenever they want. So it's always hard. When's the computer going to go on sale? Probably won't. Not until the next version comes out.
Yeah, no. Yeah,
and then,
they really don't do the big sales anymore like they used to.
Yep.
All right, tell you what. Let's go to the phone. So we got Tom from Brighton. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah. Hi. I tune in a little late, so you may have covered this topic before. Sorry if it's a repeat of what someone else asked about. But, they just announced a few days ago this problem with the Intel microprocessors, the security problem. I've got two older computers. One is from, oh, I guess it's 2010, and another one is a little bit older, actually. Would the older processors be susceptible to the security problem?
From what I've been reading, yes. It's part of the Intel architecture itself.
Yeah, it's just basic architect.
And because computers are now faster and faster, that we're finding new issues built into the way things have been designed and thought secure all along.
Okay. So would the patch for this come through Microsoft or through Intel?
The new processor would come from Intel.
And you're not going to get it for those machines.
Yeah. So for the old machines, it would come from the operating system vendor.
Yeah.
So Microsoft and Apple and Linux and Chrome and
Windows.
Yeah.
And whatever patch, if it's a software patch, the chances are it's going to slow down the computers.
Right. Because of the way the vulnerability exists, the patch is to slow things down so that it has time to flush the cache before someone can read the data.
And to be honest with you, are you really going to see it? Probably not.
Yeah, it's unlikely that you'll get attacked by this.
But folks, you're going to slow down your machine. Yeah. And it's moving faster than you can blink. So, the thought that you are going to, actually see it, probably not.
And because of the way the security researchers work, it's good that the good guys found this so that it can be addressed in future products rather than the bad guys finding it and exploiting it for who knows how long.
Right. Now, for somewhat more recent machines, are you saying that Intel will be replacing the processor for machines are just a couple of years old, perhaps?
Well, Intel's always replacing processors with new generations. So when the next generation processor comes out, it probably won't have this problem.
Right.
So what I mean is if someone's already bought a computer or a laptop, it's got a processor that's a few months or a year old, will Intel replace that processor?
You're going to have to wait and see. The jury's still out on that and what they're... One, how they can fix it and what they can do for it.
And you likely won't be able to buy a new processor for an old machine because the architecture will be different.
Yeah, I mean, you get a machine, even though, say, I buy a machine, whether I bought a machine at the beginning of last year or the end of last year, those are two different boards, two different designs, and different chips have been modified to fit those.
Yeah, long gone are the days where you can upgrade your processor because they use the same pins as the old motherboard.
Yeah.
For machines that are just a year or two old, if Intel were to replace the microprocessors for those machines, that's an enormous bill for Intel.
Right, and they wouldn't be able to replace just the processor. You'd have to replace the whole motherboard.
Especially so on a laptop where it's soldered in. Sure.
Right, so that's unlikely that's going to happen.
Yeah, that and it being 90 degrees out tomorrow are your odds.
Actually, I saw something interesting. The reason for this cold weather, the Bills made the playoff, and hell did actually freeze over.
I believe
we're living here.
Yeah.
Who'd have thought? Hmm?
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
All right. So at least for the older computers, it probably won't make that much difference. Although from a security standpoint, there is an issue.
Yeah, but you know what? Again, Tom, the odds of them breaking into your machine...
So if you were working in government or high security or military, something like that, there's a lot bigger threat.
You got better odds of getting hit by lightning standing on your roof with twin umbrellas and both, or lightning rods in either hand.
Okay.
Than you getting hit by some type of attack.
Yeah. I think lottery's $500 million tonight.
Yeah, play the lottery. You might have better odds at that.
Yeah, but of course, the one in a million that is going to be hit, that's going to get a lot of publicity and certainly going to damage Intel. Yeah.
But again,
so that maybe would happen. When someone big gets hit and affected by this vulnerability and there's a demand for
Intel
to
replace it. But it's going to have to be something worth these folks to hack into a system they're not going to waste the time for, you know, Joe Blow or some little company, you know, in Rochester or that. They're going after corporations. They're going after folks like Equifax, big corporations, Xerox, you know, I mean, the biggies.
But even those biggies have lots of computers, and they, you know, they are vulnerable.
And yep. That's where they can score bigger.
And if you're a customer of those companies, you could be hurt yourself, yep. Of course. Yep.
Yeah, that's there's all we different mentioned earlier about yeah. having multiple passwords is, you know, that there was a Target breach. If you use the same password at Target that you did at Citibank, you're in trouble.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks for the info. Appreciate yep. it.
Good luck. So it's not something to be that terribly concerned about, but it's the researchers are keeping the developers on their toes to try to keep up with everything, and hopefully we'll see new chip design. See, that's part of the problem. Since this is the fundamental architecture of the Intel chips, we need to have a radical architecture design, and that doesn't happen overnight. So some other way will have to be found to mitigate the vulnerability.
Yep. All right, let's go back to the phones. We got Dennis from Rochester. Go ahead, Dennis.
Hi. This is for Steve, or well, for both of you guys, actually. I have a friend whose laptop I take care of, and maybe a couple times a week I do super anti-spyware, and within that time I'm getting 200-300 pieces of tracking cookies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this person goes to two or three websites. She is on Facebook a lot, but, I mean, the number of websites she goes to is very, very limited. How come there are so many tracking cookies when she's not going to that many websites?
Because every website has several hundred ads on them.
Yeah, and just Facebook alone. The ads that pop up along the side?
Every one of those ads might set 10 cookies.
Yeah. Yeah, all those ads along the side, or if you're scrolling on down, something else is advertised there, boom, might pop up and open something if she accidentally clicked on it by mistake and goes quick back.
Yeah, you can look through the list of cookies and see what they are, but it usually doesn't help you any because it's right. just an ad on a website.
So I just assumed that there was one cookie per website and that's it.
Oh, well, no.
Theoretically, but when you go to a website, you're drawing content from hundreds of different sources.
Right.
Each say you go to a news site, each news story, you know, one story, it was probably drawing pictures from one website. It might be drawing a video from a different website. All the ads that are around that story are probably coming from a dozen different websites.
Okay.
There used to be a way to open a list and see all of the links that are pulling in from that site.
Tell you what, if you would, just hang on. We got to take a short break, and we'll come right back to you. You are listening to member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome up back, everybody. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And in the phone, we still have Greg. Go ahead, Greg.
It's Dennis, but that's
I'm
okay.
Sorry, Dennis.
I'll go by any name.
Just don't call you late for dinner.
Yeah.
iPhone 6 battery replacement for Steve. This is kind of an easy question. I have a used iPhone, and the previous owner replaced the battery once on it. I didn't realize, or it sounds like you're saying you guys got to do a test on that battery before you decide whether I'm going to be able to replace it for $29, $30. Is that correct?
Basically, yes, but Apple has also relaxed the rules that it doesn't have to fail the battery test in order to get the cheap replacement.
Okay, because I was kind of planning on coming down to your store there and getting the battery replaced just because it's a couple years old and the price is right.
Yeah, we can at least run a test on it to see if it does have worn out.
Okay,
as well.
Great. Thanks for your help, guys.
Sure.
Yep, bye.
Yeah, I found as I was saying during the break to Dave, most of the browsers used to have like an activity window where you could see all the links that a website is trying to open. There's so many of them, they don't bother anymore. So I found one online that I'm going to post in a minute. So I just went to the CNN website, and CNN opened 125 links. Mostly to CNN properties.
Oh, wow.
And some of them are to the image directory and the file directory, but on the CNN homepage is 125 other links. And each one of those links could have set a cookie.
Yeah.
So there's one page open to 125 links.
There you go. All right, let's go back to the phones. We got Catherine from Greece. Go ahead, Catherine.
Hi. I own a Chromebook, an Acer Chromebook.
Yeah.
And I was looking through recipes, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden I got this high-pitched thing. The screen went black, and it said that my Chromebook has detected a porn virus in the firewall.
Yep, it's fake.
Yeah, it's fake.
But how do I get rid of it?
All you got to do is turn the machine off and turn it back on.
I did, and it came back on again.
You got to close the window it's coming from.
Yeah, you got to close the browser down.
So how do I do that? All it is a black thing. I tried clicking on stuff. It wouldn't close it off.
There's no little window up in the right-hand corner that you can exit out?
A little X to close it with?
No.
I wonder if a three-finger salute will do it?
Well, whatever that is on the Chromebook.
I tried Alt-Control, but there's no delete. It's got backspace.
A lot of the browsers are they try to be helpful by reopening every window you had open last time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's reopening the malicious window. And so we're trying to find the link to force a window to close. Is there like an Alt key, Alt W for close?
They have an Alt key. It's got an Alt key, but I don't have
a Control W should close the current tab. There might be a way to close all tabs. Since the Chromebook is pretty much all browser, there's got to be a way to
close the browser,
close all the tabs, and start over again.
Okay, let me sign in and see if I can do this because it's going to come up with a huge. It's this screeching noise.
Yeah, they're getting more and more annoying. In fact, for a while they were actually vocally telling you have a virus. You know, call Microsoft, which was ironic because you're not using Microsoft. Yeah,
call Microsoft. Call Google Chrome, it said.
Yeah, and so one of the things the browser tells it is what browser you're using, so the other end can know you're on a Chromebook.
Okay.
So Control W closes a tab. Control Shift W should close all tabs.
Okay. So I'll do that, and then it should go away.
It should go away, yep.
Okay. Well,
right.
Thank you very much.
All righty.
All right. Yeah.
So some website that she was on just happened to have a malicious ad, and that ad says you have a virus. And so that becomes the big problem these days is the bad guys have figured out it's cheaper to make a fake ad than it is to actually make a virus. So they make a fake ad that says you have a virus. They hire a phone bank company to answer the phone and give them a script to follow.
Yeah.
And
away they go.
Away they go.
All right, let's go back to the phones. I think we got time for another caller or so. We got Rich from Irondequoit. Go ahead, Rich.
When I open Google, I have to reopen Google every time I turn on my computer. It used to stay on, and I'd play around for an hour, and then next time I'd open the computer and push Google here, and it would ask me if I wanted Google to make changes to the computer. Why will Google not stay open?
It's not supposed to. You have to put the browser in your startup group. What operating system are you running?
Oh, yes, it is there. But when I click on it, it has a Google message saying, do you want Google to make changes to your computer? And it has to reload every time.
What change? Google shouldn't be trying to make changes to your computer.
No, shouldn't be doing any of that.
Do you want to allow the following program to make changes to this computer, Google Chrome? Yes, I say, and then it reloads.
What changes does it say it wants to make?
It's a Microsoft program. I've seen it many times.
But what changes does it say it wants to make?
Yeah.
It's asking me if I want it to load Google.
That's not a change to your computer.
Yeah, no, that's not a change.
No.
So somewhere else in that message it should tell you what it's trying to change.
What it wants to do.
I don't know. It just wants to load it. And, when I click on it, it's...
All right.
There's something else happening because Chrome doesn't do that by itself. So there may be a malicious extension loaded.
Now, of course, you're running some spyware stuff, like Super Anti-Spyware.
Yeah, Malwarebytes and Super Anti-Spyware, not Malwarebytes.
All right. But you've run that lately?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Malwarebytes would be another one to have, but I mean, usually super anti-spyware. I like to run both, no matter what, because...
Yeah, I'm going to do that prior to your 45-minute-ago conversation.
Okay.
Because we had another story we're not going to get to. There was a malicious Chrome extension that was called Archive Poster. It's supposed to help Tumblr and Instagram users. Was actually doing crypto malware, hijacking your processor time.
Okay.
So you may have a malicious extension trying to do something to Windows, and the Windows security is preventing it from happening.
I'm going to run Malwarebytes. One more thing, gentlemen. I know you want to go home. Avast, I paid money for Avast, and now all of a sudden they want more money to enhance my protection. It says I'm not as secure as I could be. I called up Avast, and they want money for a security program.
No, just stay with the basic.
Well, it's so to two problems. It could be a fake message trying to steal your money,
mm-hmm.
or it could be a real message because all the companies offer different levels of service. So if you bought the basic level, they want to sell you the next higher level.
Yeah, they wanted to go to the next one, and you just say, no, I'm fine where I am.
And I am secure enough with... Avast is for your virus protection.
As long as you're running the super anti-spyware and the malware bytes, you're covered. You run those three.
Thanks, guys.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, the big thing, I'm trying to find the difference between Avast and Avast Pro. One of the things, though, is you're helping support the company, so there'll be a new version.
Right.
And so that's one of the things. And most of the companies now... are going to annual subscriptions. So if you bought, so it looks like Avast is $50 a year or $90 for 2 years. So there's a discount if you buy more than 1 year at a time. And what the Avast Pro does is does more sandboxing. It connects or checks for fake websites. It can scan the rest of your network to see if something else got in. So there's things the Pro version can do that you may want to buy, and you can buy those next features as well. But for the average home user, just the basic protection is enough.
Yeah, that should do you. All right. Well, those tones tell me you, as Nick would say, wasted, hopefully not a bad waste of time, listening to this program, and hopefully you've picked up some helpful tips, I should say, new year, and learn something else, and that's what we're all about. That's why we do this show every Saturday. But you know what? We'll be back again next Saturday to take more of your questions right here at member-supported Jazz 90.1. But don't worry, George is coming up next to play the finest polka music you're going to hear anywhere. So sit back. You know, enjoy. It's too cold to go outside. It's still only a blustery 6 degrees, and I see that the snow and wind are still blowing around. So you know what? Just sit back, enjoy, and enjoy the polka music right here at member-supported Jazz 90.1.